Hey, everybody, and welcome back. This is Amanda Moxley, and I am the hostess with the mostest of the Speak Your Way to Success series, where I have gathered today's leading experts, authorities, women entrepreneurs, men entrepreneurs from all around the world who are going to share their gifts and how they have been able to speak their way to success, to share their message on live streams, workshops, retreats, online, offline, etc., to impact millions and make millions. And today we have the beautiful, the one and only Joanna Lindenbaum. And I have known Joanna, maybe how long? 8 years, possibly? No, forever.
8 years now. Yeah.
So she's amazing. I'm going to give you her intro and then we'll dive in. So Joanna has supported thousands of transformational leaders to lead rituals, become master facilitators, and achieve business success and personal happiness. She does this by teaching women to tap straight into their feminine wisdom alongside concrete marketing, visibility, and business building techniques. She is a thought leader in the fields of ritual, facilitation, and entrepreneurial happiness and self-love. Welcome, Joanna.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. Well, I love what you're up to. And tell us more about, you know, what you do and how you help people with rituals and tapping into the divine feminine.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I started to notice as I've been just, you know, looking around, being in the industry for a couple of years, is that people really want to, you know, practitioners, coaches, teachers, healers, speakers, trainers, they really are wanting to stand out. Everybody wants to stand out. And, you know, what so many of us do, myself included, is we look for the latest and greatest marketing technique to stand out. And there's nothing wrong with that. I teach a lot of marketing to my clients as well. But as I was looking around, I was looking at the success of my business, and I was looking at all of the success that my clients were having, I realized, you know, what was helping both myself and my clients grow wasn't so much the latest and greatest marketing technique, but it was, that's not what helped us stand out. What helped all of that was really delivering the highest quality services that we could, like really being the best of the best in our fields and creating deep, deep transformations, long-lasting transformations, not just like quick new revelation and then it's gone, but real long-lasting shifts and transformations and results for our clients. And so because I really started to realize that and see that the reason, you know, one of the reasons was because when you deliver these amazing results, your clients keep on coming back and they tell their friends, and you create this reputation of raving fans that allows you to grow your business so much more easily. And so that's when I really started to focus on teaching coaches and healers and trainers and teachers how to be better communicators, better practitioners, really be the best at what they do through their group facilitation and through their one-on-one work.
So give us some tips. I mean, how do we become the best of the best?
Such a great question. So, you know, there's so much to say on it. And I think what I'll do is I'll focus more on group facilitation, because that's a place where, you know, we've gotten, as the transformational industry and the coaching industry, we've gotten so used to being behind our screens, and we very rarely get together in person. But the truth is that some of the biggest and deepest transformations can happen when you're together with your people in person. I think most coaches recognize that, which is why they have a couple of retreats throughout the year and events or workshops. So that's a place where you can create so much in your business, bring in more income when you get better at it, create better results. Mm-hmm. So one of the very first things when you're facilitating is to remember that people aren't only there for you. So yeah, your clients, your audiences, your participants, they're there to learn from you. But if they're not connected to their community, to the community that's there in the room, if they don't feel as excited to be with the people in the room as they feel to be with you, then they're not going to be as present. They're not going to allow themselves to be as vulnerable. They're not going to learn as deeply. So as a facilitator, and this is true whether you're in person or leading your online groups, your online programs, whatever it is, one of the most things you could do to create deeper learning and deeper results is to create a sacred community. I always tend to say a sacred sisterhood since I tend to work only with women, but whether you work with women or women and men, you want the community to support each other. You want to create that sense of that circle, that like-mindedness, that ability to trust each other and be supported by each other. It also helps you do less of the work as right. the facilitator when you do that. So, you know, that's one of really the first things that I look at together with my students and my clients when they're putting together their retreats, their events, their workshops, or their group programs, even if they're online, is how do you create community? Mm-hmm. That's also what helps people coming back to your programs, because someone could love what you're teaching them in a program, but when it comes to re-sign, they want to feel connected to the other people in the community as well.
So how do you get them connected to the community?
So there's lots of different ways, you know, just depending on your setup. But one of the things is when you're in a room with people, when you're actually leading and facilitating in the room, you don't want to be doing all of the talking. So I know that's sort of facilitation and teaching one-on-one, but I think a lot of facilitators don't understand the depth of this and how far to really go with it. You want to create exercises and activities where people can connect with each other. You want to ask questions in the room that allow people not just to learn, but to be seen, to mm-hmm. share their vulnerabilities, to celebrate themselves. You don't want to be the only, as a facilitator, you don't want to be the only one in the room giving feedback. You want to be creating opportunities for other participants to be giving feedback. And, sorry about that. And also to be sharing with each other. Mm-hmm. The other thing, and this is really, really important, particularly if you're working with women exclusively, is as the facilitator, you want to be aware of what I call the sister wound. So what's the sister wound? We all have it as women in one way or another, even if we've done a lot of work, and even if we actually have actual sisters or not. What the sister wound is wounding around other women. Mm-hmm. It's about comparison. It's about judgment. It's about feeling like you're not being seen by others. It's about feeling like, oh my God, was I too big? Did I talk too much? We all bring our own sister wounds, those family dynamics, into any group situation that we're in. And they vary in degree, just depending on how intense the situation is. 2-hour workshop, maybe we don't bring them in as much, but 4-day retreat, those dynamics are going to come through. Yeah. So as the facilitator, if you're not aware of the sister wound, if you haven't worked on your own sister wound, and then aware that the other women in the room are bringing it, men can bring it too, I guess we could call it the brother wound, what's going to happen is all of those blocks and obstacles and judgments and comparisons and I can't be too big or I'm too small or she's so much better or I just said something stupid or oh, why is she taking up so much space? All of that stuff is going to show up in one way or another in the room. The more you can be aware of that sister wound, then you can use different techniques to really to allay those and actually create healing from it so that everybody shows up fully present, vulnerable, respectful of everybody else, and really allows themselves to be seen and heard while also seeing others.
That's such a good point. I was at a retreat last year and the facilitator said, okay, someone in this room, you are going to project, it's going to remind you of your mother. And you're going to project. And I looked around, no one reminded me of my mom, but someone reminded me of my stepmom. And she was like perfect and beautiful and totally coiffed and, you know, like whatever that is. And I was like, she doesn't like me, because that was my story. And then we got paired up together, of course, to do it like, and we were role playing. And she was like, Amanda, I hope this serves the community. I just want to share. It was a huge transformation for me. That's that's why I'm sharing this. And she said, Amanda, I really admire you, your family, your husband, this lifestyle you have. I really admire it. And I was like, yeah, right. Like in my mind, I was like, yeah, right, bitch, you don't admire me. Like you hate me. Like you don't even know me. And then the coach said, wait a second, you're not even receiving what she's saying. And I was like, I was like so blocked. And then it was this huge healing because I realized I was projecting all of my fears around these, you know, this evil stepmother onto really beautiful coiffed women. And anyway, this is huge what you're talking about. It's huge.
It really is. It's when, and if you're skilled as a facilitator in being able to navigate that wounding and the other family dynamics, the mother projections and the father projections and all of that, if you can really come in consciously as the facilitator and really have techniques to work it, not only can you heal those wounds, but then everybody in your audience is way more open to what you're teaching. They're way more able to receive from you and everyone else, and you create just around your content, whether you're teaching marketing, whatever you're teaching, you create so much more movement for your people, so much more excitement, and they feel so much more comfortable and trusting and at home with you and your community, which is ultimately what you want for repeat business and for building your reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that weekend I did a video at that time and it was like $7,500. The ROI did not come from the video, but the ROI came in that healing from that situation with women. So this is so true. So, but the facilitator needs to be aware. They need to know how to manage it. And I think just being present to it is helpful, but how do people manage it and navigate it and set up that sacred space?
Yeah. So there's, you know, in terms of like the sister wound and the community, that's sort of some advanced techniques that I can't get into here, but I will share some other pieces that are really important for facilitators. So important. So the next piece, this is related to the community piece, but it's a little bit different, is you want to create a sacred container. So what does that mean? And this goes for one-on-one work, but the problem really shows up in group work. So and we have all been at an event or at a retreat or at a workshop where there's been a leaky container. So a leaky container is one where people are constantly checking out, they're checking their cell phones, their email, they're going to the bathroom a little bit more than they need to, they're zoning out. They're somehow somebody gets angry at the facilitator or they get angry at somebody else in the room. There's triggers going on. And there's just this general sense of like the energy isn't quite in the room. When that happens, it's because as a facilitator, you haven't created a strong and tight container. Yeah. When you have a strong and tight container, then you literally feel almost like there's an energetic bubble around your group and everybody is present. Everybody is paying attention. Of course, people can get triggered, especially if you're, you know, working with edgy content, but it's not to the point where somebody is going to blow up at somebody else or at you. It's not to the point where someone's going to leave the retreat early and say, you know, I'm out of here. It's not to the point where people are going to be constantly leaving the room. So there's a lot of different ways to create solid and tight and strong containers. I'll share a couple of them here because there's some that are super simple. So number one, this seems so obvious, but so many people don't think about it. Be conscious of the size of your room. So if you've ever gone to a workshop that there's way fewer people that should be in the room, like the room is really, really big, but there's maybe like only 15 people in it, there's no container there. There's no way to really contain the energy, and energy gets leaked and lost. It's hard to really feel part of the group. If you have to rent a space and it's way bigger than the amount of people there, I suggest putting like Christmas lights or twinkly lights in a circle, having people go in there, putting chairs around the room, see if the room can be partitioned off. That's just one really easy way to begin to create a container. But there are so many others. I mean, one is about, you know, in almost every retreat that I run, if I can, I have everybody starting out as in a circle in the beginning. Even if there's, you know, 50, 60, 70 people, if we can get a room where everybody's, you know, holding hands around the circle just for a couple minutes, I do. The reason is because we're all creating this energetic container. Even if we all go to our seats afterwards, it's fine, but we've begun to create an energy around the room. A lot of it is also just you as the facilitator, the energy that you bring in, and the, I don't know if you can see on the video, but I'm like, I'm reaching out my hands like energetically. Yeah, you want to hold the group. You want to make sure that there's a holding that's happening. So these are just simple ways. There's so many techniques that I teach around it, but these are just some kind of like easy. Ooh, you okay?
Excuse me. Yes.
These are some really easy pointers and techniques just that off the bat can really help. Even as people are walking in the room, whether it's you or people on your team, just greeting people as they come in the room so they don't feel like, where am I? Do I know anyone? What's happening here? Even that creates that sense of connection and container that can make so much of a difference and help you go deep into your material right away.
Yeah, I love that. Really good stuff. And then what are some, I mean, I will tell you that I love that you actually help people. This is your jam of helping them become better facilitators. And I guess I know that at my very first event, I had a crazy lady. I mean, and she literally, it was so intense, Joanna, at the event. I literally was like, dude, you are freaking me out. Like, I mean, she was so horrible. And it was like, literally someone had to walk her out. It was like the craziest thing. Yeah. And she's messing with my energy so bad. And I was just like, you are messing with me. Like, I don't know. She's like bona fide, you know, and I take responsibility, but I learned a lot because I put myself on the edge that first event.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, I hear about stuff like that from so many people. And again, like every now and again, you get someone who is just bona fide crazy. And as the facilitator, there's not much that you can do about that except to pre-qualify people before they come in. But most of the time, when something like that happens, I call it somebody taking hostage of the group.
Yeah.
So I've heard so many stories. Most of the time when somebody takes hostage, they're actually not crazy. It's actually one of two things have happened. Number one, the container wasn't tight enough. There was some leaks in the container. Or number two, and this is another really important facilitation principle for facilitators, the facilitator wasn't skilled enough in handling shadow and archetype.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is that when we're in groups, and also when we're in a learning situation, in a situation where we're really being asked to stretch and to learn and to grow, and we're really being pushed up against our edge, some participants, you know, will resist, because part of the process of growth is resistance. It just is. Now, a lot of us can resist in ways that are socially acceptable, but some people, they get so triggered by the being asked to stretch and grow that they step into different archetypes or different shadow parts of themselves. So in retreats or workshops or group events, we typically see a couple of different resistance archetypes. We can see, for example, the teacher. I call it the teacher, right? The one who all of a sudden becomes the know-it-all and tries to be smarter than the facilitator, right? Yeah. So that's one kind of archetype of resistance. Someone who's just so stuck, who's so scared to grow that they have to step into that place. Another archetype I'm sure a lot of us have seen is the victim, right? They go into the poor me, this isn't going to work for me, everything sucks, I just can't. They start crying, you know, that whole thing. Another archetype that's very common when it comes to resistance is the judge. They're rolling their eyes. the facilitator is stupid, everyone in here sucks, this information, you know, doesn't make sense, right? And then I'll just name one more archetype of resistance is the confused one, right? The one who she's totally smart woman, got it, has it together, totally sharp, but all of a sudden she just doesn't understand a word that you're saying and asks the most inane questions, right? So there are some other archetypes, but those are some of the main ones that can come up. And what's important for a really masterful facilitator to know is that it's normal. Number one, it's normal for people to resist. And when they resist, they're gonna step into these archetypes and into some of their shadow places. And then what you want, and this I train people, you know, unfortunately I can't give a simple answer to how to handle this because I spend, you know, 4 days training people on how to, but you really, if you're gonna do deep, especially if you're gonna be doing deep transformational work, you wanna know how to help participants work through their shadows and work through their resistance and the archetypes that show up. It's so vitally important, or else you're going to have people taking the group hostage or just checking out and not getting what they really came for from the event.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And I'm just so curious, how did you get into all this and know these archetypes? And I mean, I'm just laughing. I mean, this is so helpful. I love this. And here's the thing about me, guys, is that like, I'm just like, my whole motto, as you know, is JFTI. So I'm just like, I'm just going to do it. And then I throw myself in there and I'm like, whoa, what do I get myself into? Be smarter to go to your class and get really prepared. But I learned the hard way, but it's fun too. So how did you get into all this? And
you know, it's really from my background as a ritualist. So before I became a coach, I learned ritual. I learned how women had for millennia been the keepers of ritual throughout all different cultures, throughout all different religions. And I learned how to facilitate women's rituals. Now, when you learn, and I teach a lot about ritual when I teach facilitators, because when you learn how to facilitate rituals, all of these elements are part of it. You always sit in a circle, for example. The different goddesses are different archetypes. You know, if we look at any kind of god or goddess, each one of them has a weakness to their personality and a strength to their personality. And so I really learned about the archetypes and the shadow pieces by studying all of that mythology. And then just through the years of, you know, the other thing you learn in ritual, which is another really important, so important for a facilitator, is to teach not only through mental, is to use all five senses, because the way that people learn the most isn't just through their minds. They learn through their bodies. They learn by processing and taking in different experiences. So I learned how to do that by learning about all different kinds of rituals and ways to do that. So all of these different elements that I'm teaching are really from years of facilitating ritual, and then the other piece, and being a facilitator and a coach myself. But honestly, the other piece is that I really, because of all of the hardships in my life, right? We all have this, like, something good comes of the hardships in my life. I grew up in a family where my mother was ill most of the time, and where I really had to parent her through it. And what happened for me through all of that is I became really good at understanding human nature. I became a really deep listener, an intuitive listener, and I understood what types of actions yielded what types of reactions and responses. And I studied my family dynamics very deeply. And so all of those pieces, I just bring all of that into how I facilitate. And I am convinced that that's why people are so fully transformed when they come to my retreats, because I'm bringing sort of the ritual and then the, you know, the years experience, but really just my own hardships, learning how to deeply understand human nature, which is what we all need as facilitators and coaches.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So when you say you studied to be a ritualist, like what was that, like a high priestess training or a women, a goddess group, or what is that?
So it was feminine divine, and it wasn't a high priestess training. This is actually, I want to make a point of it because it's important on the facilitators. And I know there's a lot of, like in ritual and feminine divine groups, a lot of talk of the high priestess, but how I learned, there were no high priestesses. We were all priestesses, meaning we were all on the same level. There was nobody that was any better than anyone else. And the reason why I'm highlighting that is because we need to know that as facilitators as well. So when I facilitate, I am the leader. I'm definitely the leader, but I'm not higher or more elevated than anyone else. That really helps create that sense of sisterhood and that stronger container. And it helps empower your participants to not only be vulnerable and share, but to learn more deeply because they're trusting themselves while they're trusting you. But so I trained through a women's community in New York City, and it was lightly around the feminine divine. So we definitely looked at all of the different, you know, goddess mythology. It was very much around the wheel of the year. That's a lot of what I teach my facilitators. There's so much to learn around the wheel of the year, the four elements. When do you bring in air, which is the element of the intellect? So when do you facilitate with air and the intellect versus when do you bring in water, which is so much about emotion, right? Because you want to have an intellectual experience when you learn and transform, but you also want an emotional experience. When do you bring in earth, which is so much about the body and movement? When do you bring in fire, which is so much about the heart and creativity and the soul and the passion? So I use all of those different kinds of elements to teach facilitators how to be effective, even with the elements as well.
And did you do this just out of your own curiosity, or was this part of your work or your initial career, or was it just part of your own healing to understand these dynamics?
Yeah. So I got into the ritual training just out of my own desire for personal development. And actually, when I started my business, I started as a ritualist before I even got my coaching certification, before I helped women build their businesses. I ran women's empowerment groups and circles and rituals and all of that. So I bring all of that into the business coaching and now into training coaches and facilitators.
It's so wonderful. I love it. I really love it. I'm really glad you're bringing this part into your, because I've known you forever. I've known you forever, 8 years online. And I just love this. I think it's a really missing piece for people to be able to receive and to have a greater understanding. So I know you have a really good gift to share. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Unlock Your Business. I forget the actual title. It's called Unlock Your Business Archetype. Yeah. And it's an assessment that you can take. It's a quiz. And especially if you liked the part of the conversation about archetypes, you'll love this quiz. But you take it, and then it really helps you see what your greatest strength is that you're probably blocking yourself right now that can be used in your business.
That sounds really good. Yeah. Okay. So we have that for you all on the page here for you to download. I really recommend that you get that. I mean, super important, because everyone here, they want to speak their way to success and they want to do retreats or workshops or online and offline. And this is going to really help you understand yourself more. And then, Joanna, I like to invite everyone to engage in some sort of question after these interviews. So what do you think would be a good thing? And then they'll come back to the Facebook group and we could talk about it. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, what comes to mind? Tell me if you think this is good. But the question that immediately comes to mind is, what's been your biggest snafu at an event, either as a facilitator or a participant?
That's good. Gosh, I know, at an event either. I love this. This is so fascinating. At an event or as a participant. Yeah. What has been your biggest snafu at an event as a facilitator or a participant?
Such a great question. So I'll try to make it a short story, but basically, a couple years ago, I was training a group of facilitators, and we were late one night. I was teaching them how to do an ancestor ritual where you can connect in with your ancestors. And it was really beautiful, but I was really tired. I was teaching two back-to-back retreats. And of course, I'm teaching all about containers and safe containers and all of that. But at the end of this ancestor ritual, I forgot to close the container and I forgot to ask the ancestors to leave. I was just so tired. I didn't even think of it. Yeah. Well, what do you know, the very next morning, we come back together and I'm checking in, you know, we're in circle and I'm asking how, you know, checking in, people are sharing, and woman after woman after woman is like, my grandmother Millie was in the room with me last night. I saw weird colors last night, you know, and as they're sharing, I'm going, holy shit, I forgot to close the container. I'm teaching about containers. Yeah. And I forgot to close the container. And I'm thinking, what do I do here? What do I do here? Now, as the facilitator, I could have just been like, oh, that's normal, that's natural, no big deal, whatever. But I knew as a masterful facilitator, what was going to be the best was to own up to what happened. So even though it was terrifying for me, once everybody shared, I said, you know, I'm about to share something with you that you're not going to hear most leaders share, but more leaders should share this. I messed up. Mm-hmm. The reason why you were seeing your grandmother and your dead dog and you're this and you're that is because I forgot to close the container. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry about that. Now, just by sharing this and we ask them to leave, that was enough to close it. You don't have to worry, but that's what happened. And I'll tell you, Amanda, like it was terrifying when people were going around and sharing and I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I done? Like I'm teaching them how to facilitate and I messed up. But yeah. The learning was about part of being a transformational leader and a transformational facilitator is to speak the truth, even when it's hard. And after I did that, I didn't know what was going to happen next in the group. We still had 3 days left. The trust went even deeper. The sharing went even deeper. The vulnerability, the shifting went even deeper. And it's because I strengthened the container in that way with that share.
That's a really good, I love that. I love it. Thank you for sharing. That was good. So we want to hear from y'all. What has been your biggest snafu, either attending an event or hosting your own event or retreat or workshop? I mean, this is a good question. I just had a thought. I remember when I was first doing one of my launches on an online call back in 2011 or 12, and this lady came on the line and she was like, well, who do you think you are? Like, what do you know? And I was just like, hi, you know, like, I'm sure I'm not the only, you know, that was so long. I've so gotten in my power since those days, but you know, this is a good question. We are going to unravel a bunch here. Well, Joanna, I want to invite you to our group, to our sacred container in the BU Make Bank group and engage with everyone here. So everyone, please download her amazing gift. And Joanna, thank you again for this amazing time. And well, this is great. I want to know more about your next retreat for sure.
Thanks for having me. So great to talk.
All right, everybody. Talk to you later. Thanks for being here. See you in the Facebook group.